your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, with your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. This program will give parents and educators the skills and methods to effectively advocate for children today. And now, here's Rich and Michelle.
Welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. I'm Michelle Davis, and my co-host is Rich Weinfeld. Our show is dedicated to exploring issues in schools and school systems that can really make the difference between what we are now and what we could be as a society. We believe that with high expectations and an education system that works, all children can achieve. In our show, if you have children, you will learn how to partner with the school to advocate for your child in a powerful and effective way. And if you're an educator, listening to the show will advance your skills and knowledge to affect positive changes in other educators and overall school communities. Today, we are so fortunate to have a very special guest, Jonathan Mooney, and he is going to talk to us about his experience of his learning and a child who learns differently. How does it feel to believe that you're not as smart as your classmates, or even worse, to be labeled as stupid, crazy, and lazy? Jonathan Mooney today is the author of Learning Outside the Lines and The Short Bus, A Journey Beyond Normal. He's going to talk about his journey from sixth grade dropout to Ivy League honor student. He's going to discuss the paradigm shift of not viewing weaknesses as disabilities, but appreciating cognitive diversity and the need for students to become powerful self-advocates. But first, let me turn it over to Rich for our Hot Topics segment.
Hello, Michelle, and hello, everybody. On many of our shows, we will have a guest reporter to bring us up to date on hot topics in education, and we're going to rotate several people through this role as guest reporter. Today, we're happy to have Mark Beatty from the 2E Twice Exceptional newsletter. Jonathan Mooney, who is today's guest, can certainly be described as a Twice Exceptional or 2E student, and that's a student who's both gifted and had learning differences or disabilities. Mark Beatty, along with his wife Linda Newman, published the 2E Twice Exceptional newsletter. Mark, I want to welcome you, and please tell us about the 2E Twice Exceptional newsletter.
Michelle and Rich, thanks for the chance to talk with you today. Well, the newsletter is basically, it's for parents, educators, and clinicians who deal with high-potential kids who have barriers to learning, barriers like learning disabilities or social or emotional issues, physical disabilities, things like that. We publish it 6 times a year in electronic format, usually 24 to 28 pages. My partner, Linda Newman, she's the brains behind the venture, but it's been a very gratifying venture for us. We're in our 5th year now.
That's great, and I know all of us who are in the field working with Twice Exceptional students really rely on getting that information from you every month, and again, really appreciate you being on with us. And I wanted to mention, I noticed looking at the website, that you were a winner of the National Parenting Publications Award in 2006.
And that's true. We were proud of that.
Doesn't surprise me. So Mark, let's jump in. Can you give us a little roundup of some hot topics this week, this month, in education?
Glad to. You know, for the newsletter, I do a lot of reading and giftedness and things that can impair achievement of high ability kids. And the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of interesting stuff in the news. For example, you know, one of the factors that affects learning can be race and culture. And Education Week recently did an article on studies that seem to indicate that it's the brightest African-American children who lose the most ground compared to bright white kids. And the researchers that were quoted in the article were trying to figure out the causes, whether it's less experienced teachers for the black pupils or differences in teacher expectations or what.
So I just want to clarify what you're saying, so that for black students, the gap is bigger for the gifted students than for the non-gifted students.
As they get older, as they progress through the grades, the bright black kids seem to lose ground. And that was an interesting interesting article.
Yeah, and you mentioned teachers as being a factor. Were there other factors that were mentioned?
Well, they were trying to actually figure out, I think, according to the article, if it was a statistical kind of aberration based in the way they did research. But they didn't sound real sure. It sounded like they were still trying to figure it out.
Okay. What else do you have for us?
Well, in the last few weeks, there's been a bunch of stories about dyslexic achievers, excuse me.
Hmm.
You know, sometimes I think they have their own PR agency. You know, so many of these articles. Not really. There was one about the owner of a $36 million used furniture retailing operation who learned to fake it in school, but you know, when he opened his own business, he stopped having to fake it. I mean, he could say to somebody, "Can you read this to me?" Or he could do his presentations to his banker in crayon and, you know, not have to worry about it. So he's a very successful guy. That was in CNNmoney.com.
No, Mark, I have I happen to look up Danny Glover and Tom Cruise, who I think we could agree are twice exceptional in that, you know, they struggled with learning differences as children, and Danny Glover says that he struggles with dyslexia. In an interview, he said that he also dealt with images he had of himself that what's considered to be acceptable in terms of how he looked and how he was learning. He says the whole thing about dyslexia, in a sense, is that it made me feel as if I was some unworthy, as if I was in some sort of way unworthy to learn.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a common experience.
But you're going to hear a lot about that from your next guest.
Yeah,
that's
yes,
right.
For sure.
And mentioning Danny Glover reminds me of the film Ennis's Gift, E-N-N-I-S, Ennis's Gift,
uh-huh.
which is a wonderful training vehicle if any of the listeners are looking for a way to make people aware of that bright people can have disabilities and vice versa. It's made by the Ennis Cosby Foundation, and that's Bill Cosby's son, Ennis, who was tragically murdered. And the film was made in his honor, and Danny Glover is in it, as well as Charles Schwab, James Earl Jones, Lindsay Wagner, Bruce Jenner, many other famous people who struggled with learning differences. Very, very powerful training tool. So Mark, other hot topics?
Well, yeah, educators might be interested in this next one. Every year, Edutopia magazine selects a daring dozen, 12 people who are reformers and activists in education. And this year, there's a global six who make a difference worldwide. So I think educators might be interested in checking that out for inspiration. It's at edutopia.org, edutopi.org.
And I know your focus with the newsletter is the Twice Exceptional. Anything else in the world of Twice Exceptional that you wanted to bring us up to date on?
Well, not really. Most of the news this week was focused on the 25th anniversary of the release of the report Nation at Risk.
Oh, that's right.
In 1983. And so if it's okay with you, I'd like to talk about that a little bit.
Please.
Great.
For example, Education Week republished the original coverage that they'd done 25 years ago. And it led off, quote, "The nation's educational system has slipped into mediocrity at a time when the pace of international competition demands stronger schools and colleges than ever before," you know, says the report of the 18-member panel, blah, 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 end quote. But on their website, Education Week has an interactive retrospective on the events since the report was issued. But what struck me was how timely that article lead still sounds today. Over and over, we still hear the same thing. So it's kind of amazing to me that evidently not much has changed in 25 years.
25 years, yeah.
Mark,
I know I most recently saw you at the Aegis conference, and I don't if you want to speak a few words about that conference and your experience there.
Yeah, thanks. I'd like to plug that conference and another one for parents and teachers who find themselves with kids who are high ability but underperforming, you know, kids like, well, your guest Jonathan Mooney was. The conference we were at was sponsored by Aegis, the Association of the Education of gifted underachieving students, and parents and educators who were there got a lot out of it. You're on the board of directors of Aegis, I understand.
Yes, I am. And you know, for me, what's wonderful about the organization and the conferences is they are very small conferences. You know, usually between 150 and 450 at the most. So there's a lot of time for folks to interact with the presenters. Really have time to talk about their kids and get some advocacy tips advice and suggestions. And the conference is in a different city each year, so there's you know, an opportunity for folks in different parts of the country to easily get to the conference if they're patient and wait for the conference to come to them. And I'll tell the listeners, it's aegus.org, AEGUS.org, to find information about future conferences.
It's so important for parents and educators to come together in groups to advocate on behalf of children.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Much more power in numbers and a lot of support in that, too.
And there's one more conference coming up in July that serves the same purpose. That's the SENG Conference, S-E-N-G, Supporting Emotional Needs of the Gifted. That's in mid-July in Salt Lake City. And, you know, like Aegis, it's a cozy, worthwhile conference, I think, especially for parents and educators who may, you know, feel that they're alone trying to deal with the issues of twice exceptionality. So,
I agree with you, Mark. I've had the opportunity to present there a couple of times. A little more of a focus on the social emotional side rather than the academic side, but there's a lot of crossover between the two organizations. Very similar kind of conferences, so yes. Both great resources.
Similar missions, I think. How much time do we have, Rich?
Well, I know that we're starting to come up with our first break. Mark, you've been generous enough, I think, to donate subscriptions to the TUI newsletter for our first two callers today.
That's right. My pleasure.
That's great. So,
Can you give us
I was going to say the first two great questions that we get on call-in, we'll take the contact information and we'll give it to Mark so they can get their free subscriptions.
Any more items, or should we wrap it up?
I think we'll wrap it up. And again, Mark, thank you so much for spending time with us, and we look forward to having you back in future weeks to bring us up to date on things involving twice exceptional kids, but as you did today, all kinds of educational hot topics.
Well, Michelle and Rich, thanks again, and actually, thanks for not asking me to appear on your show after Jonathan Mooney.
tough act to follow.
It's going to be a hard act to follow.
Thank you, and that's a great segue. We're going to, after we go to a brief break, we're going to bring Jonathan on, and I'll introduce you to him, and we're going to have a lot of time to speak with him today. I'd like to read a brief paragraph from a book that I co-authored called Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties, and it was co-authored with my good friends and colleagues Linda Barnes Robinson, Sue Jeweler, and Betty Shevitz. It talks about kids like Jonathan. Diamonds are rare. 250 tons of rock, sand, and gravel must be processed to yield 1 carat of polished diamond. The diamonds we will be discussing are also rare. Bright students with learning difficulties are often not identified because their brilliance and roughness may mask one another. We see only the rough parts, such as their inability to write or read effectively. What results is an attitude of discouragement and defeat. We'll be back after the break with Jonathan Mooney.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a price war among the major term life carriers. Consider these possible rates. A man age 45, non-tobacco user, could obtain $1 million of coverage for as little as $75 a month, and this rate is fixed for the next 10 years. We specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. A man age 50, non-tobacco user, may be able to obtain $500,000 of coverage for as little as $115 per month, and this rate is fixed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed not to change for 20 years. We have great rates for smokers too. For new or replacement term life insurance, call the Term Lifeline now. 800-890-5075. 800-890-5075. That's 800-890-5075.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators educators. Do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. I'm Michelle Davis, and my co-host is Rich Weinfeld. We're about to introduce our guest today, Jonathan Mooney. We'd like to remind listeners to please email us with questions at specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. Again, specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. Or the call-in number again is 1-866-472-5792. Rich, let's introduce Jonathan Mooney.
We're very excited and honored to have Jonathan with us today. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Today's guest is a guy who couldn't sit still in his first grade class, a guy who was in the lowest reading group, a guy who dropped out of school at one point, a guy who in the school setting was identified with the disabilities of attention deficit disorder and being learning disabled. He's a guy who was told by a teacher that he'd be lucky to get a job flipping burgers. He's also a guy who majored in English literature at Brown University, where he graduated with honors. He's also the author of two dynamic books, Learning Outside the Lines and The Short Bus, A Journey Beyond Normal. He is also a guy who's a motivational speaker in demand all over the world, and we'll tell you a little bit about his upcoming schedule later. And he's also the director of Eye to Eye, a highly effective mentoring program, which we'll get into a little bit today, too. So we're pleased to have Jonathan Mooney as our guest today. Jonathan?
Rich, Michelle, good morning. Honored to be on your show. Thanks so much for having me.
So glad to have you.
Thank you.
Jonathan, I'm going to jump right in. Can you take us through your journey through school? And I'd like you to start with, if you can remember, when you first realized you were having problems in school.
You know, my experiences with not fitting into the institution of education happened really early, Rich. I have a pretty vivid memory of a stark difference between my preschool life, and I mean that in the literal sense of that word, my experiences in preschool, in kindergarten, and then my experiences in first grade. I mean, I literally remember preschool as a phenomenal experience. You know, I kind of wish that all of school was the same pedagogy of preschool. You know, it's a hands-on experience, it's a learner-centered experience, it's dynamic, it's multimodal, and then you go to first grade and it's the desk and standardized learning. I mean, I remember my hands sweating, literally, and no exaggeration, seeing that desk, you know, in first grade, and the imperative of sit there for, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 30 minutes. Nowadays in school, it's 30 minutes for first graders. You know, I remember being on the playground in my first grade class, and there were bikes on the playground, and the bikes could only be ridden in a certain way around a certain set of lines in a certain rigid structure. And you know, that just don't go down for Jonathan Mooney, you know what I mean? And not just Jonathan Mooney, it doesn't go down for a lot of young people. It was a shock to my system to go from a learner-centered dynamic environment to a teacher-centered standardized environment.
When you talk about the desk, talk a little more about that. Why would a desk present a problem to you?
Well, you know, I think that we have a real moralization of the behaviors that occur at the desk and what happens in a teacher-centered environment. You know, good kids in our culture, and I mean good in the most dynamic sense of that word, good kids, moral kids, sit still at the desk. You know, there's research that documents that educators conflate compliance with good moral behavior. There's research that shows that young people associate being compliant, sitting still, being praised for sitting still, with good moral behavior,
so
with being a good person.
What did Jonathan Mooney look like at the desk?
The opposite of that. the polar opposite of the compliant kid. You know, I'm the kid whose foot starts bouncing 5 minutes into class and then both feet and then the drums and then, you know, I'm the kid who stood up and tried to put his leg behind his neck, you know.
Right.
I'm blurting things out, you know. I'm the antithesis of the myth. And this is an important point. It is a myth that what it means to be good is to be compliant. And it's also a myth that what it means to learn and learn best is to sit still. There's a lot of research that is demonstrating, and there's a really cool book out there that I think your listeners should know about. It's a book called Spark by John Rady. And John Rady is the co-author of Driven to Distraction, friend of mine. He wrote this book called Spark,
along with Ed Hollowell, right?
Driven to Distraction was co-authored with Ned Hollowell,
Ed
exactly.
Hollowell, right.
Seminal book in the field, but Spark should be treated as just as important. Spark is demonstrating the link between physical activity and learning, that a lot of kids who move and are pathologized for moving are actually implementing a learning strategy, that movement is intrinsically linked to thinking and learning. So it's a myth, and it's a devastating myth. Because I couldn't sit still, it was Jonathan, stop moving, and my brain would turn off. And then it was Jonathan, focus, 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 but I only have one way to focus, which is move. Then it's Jonathan, hallway. Then it's Jonathan, you're the bad kid, which became an essential part of how I saw myself.
So you were made to feel it was your fault.
Not only was I made to feel it was my fault, I was made to feel as if there was something intrinsically and essentially wrong with me. You know, the identity of the bad kid is a stigmatized identity that says you're morally defective. So I was made to feel that because I was non-compliant, that I was broken.
Now, was there a teacher who made the difference in a positive way? Can you think of you know, someone, and I've heard you speak about teachers before, someone who helped you turn it around?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, without question. And it's important for your listeners, in whatever hat they wear in the world, to understand that for all the damage that can be done by a negative school experience, that damage can be countered, and if not entirely undone, certainly countered by the power of a caring and meaningful adult, specifically the power of a connected and committed teacher.
So tell us about, you know, who was that for you?
Yeah, I had a few in my life. In high school, in university, but my first was really a third grade teacher named Mr. R, who was the first educator to really connect with me and to engage me in my learning. And he did that, I think, in a variety of different ways. But first and foremost, he did that by engaging with me as a human being, and a human being who is worthy of respect, opposed to a set of problems to be treated. You know, a lot of young people in my case, they go through their education and have their education mobilized around their problems, and they are treated in literally the most, you know, direct sense of that word. They're treated opposed to empowered as human beings. And Mr. Rosenbaum empowered me as a human being.
You've talked about your quote unquote attention problems. You know how you felt at the desk. What other differences, or if you want to call them disabilities, what other things interfered with your learning in school?
Well, first, and I'll get to the specifics, but I think that your rhetorical distinction is really important, and
right.
your distinction that you made in the introduction is really wise, and it's one of the reasons why I have so much respect and admiration for the work that you've done. It is a question of what learning disabilities did I experience in school, and that last sort of phrase, experience, is subtle yet really important, because to ask me what I was diagnosed with or to ask me what my disability is implies that disability is a stable phenomena in the world. You know, that Jonathan Mooney is always learning disabled in every single context in which he lives. It implies that this is an immutable fact of who I am, and it's a medical fact of who I am. But your distinction, and the distinction that I encourage people to make, is that disability is inherently a social experience and a social idea, and it's something that arises in the interaction of difference with environment. So, for example, everything that I just said in this modality of an interview where I can talk, I'm not disabled. I'm not intrinsically learning disabled by the modality. But if you ask me to write out on the board, for example, in chalk, in front of my peers, everything I just said, in that moment, because of the code of the environment, I become disabled. So yes, I experienced other learning disabilities in school. I experienced a tremendous struggle with reading, and having reading be identified as the only way to be an intelligent human being. I did not learn to read until I was 12 years old, and subsequently, I grew up in my educational experiences thinking I was stupid.
And Jonathan, I know the reading, the writing, the attention impacted you a lot through all of public school. I'm sure people who haven't heard you talk before are dying to know how did the transition happen? How did you get from there to being able to go to Brown University and be successful there?
Yeah, that's the nice way to ask the question, Rich. The more common way to ask the question is, well, what drugs did you take and where can I buy some, right? That's the most common way to ask that question. Or did Brown University make a mistake? That's the other phrasing. Pretty dramatic transformation in my life.
And John, let me give you a heads up. We have about a minute to break, so I'm going to get you started on this, and then probably we're going to pause and resume after break. But please go ahead.
Sure. Pretty dramatic transformation in my life, obviously. While there was no tipping point or turning point, meaning there was no moment in which I found the light, and I hope this is what we can talk about after our break, is there was a series of messages or seeds that were planted in me leading up to my decision-making in my adult life. There were
Jonathan, I'm going to pick back up with you right there, and we're going to go to break, and we'll be right back with Jonathan Mooney.
Right.
I know the fears that your elders grew
by. Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough.
Did you know your child's asthma attacks can be triggered by things like shower curtains, a blanket, even a teddy bear.
I feel like I'm choking.
And there are many other things in your home and your child's classroom you may not know about. For the latest information, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Help prevent your child's asthma attacks and avoid the emergency room. Call toll-free 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Or visit www.noattacks.org.
I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
We're back with Jonathan Mooney on Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. And Jonathan, before we left for our last break, you were talking about in your life there have been a series of messages or seeds that were planted to lead to your successful transition to Brown. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, and I think it's important that that these are emphasized as ongoing things that were emphasized or taught to me through the course of my education, not single moments. But first and foremost, you know, I was given the message at a very young age, primarily from my mother, that it was important for me to become a self-advocate in my education. If you look at the research shows that young people with learning differences, twice exceptionalities, who go off to live successful adult lives, the thing they have in common is not IQ, not basic skills or good reading. The thing they have in common is they're self-advocates in their education for themselves. And that was ingrained in me at a very young and early age. I was given the message, and this is by the educator named Mr. R, who I mentioned, was talking about, you know, I was really given the message that I needed to craft and build an education that was grounded not in what I couldn't do, but in what I could do. You know, a sense of myself and a sense of my education that was grounded in my strengths, gifts, and talents, and not just deficits and problems. And lastly, I was really given a message that I needed and deserved and should fight for accommodations within my education opposed to just remediating my problem. Young people with cognitive differences are protected under two pieces of federal legislation, their civil rights legislation, particularly the ADA. And what this legislation demands is that young people receive accommodations for their differences in environments, accommodations such as books on tape, voice-activated software, time extensions, note-takers, etc., etc. But often those accommodations aren't given. Parents aren't aware of their rights. Accommodations are given in stigmatizing ways. For me, I was not accommodated in my education, really and authentically, until I got to higher education, and that was a revelation for me. So when those accommodations were in place, that was the practical or pragmatic tool that allowed me to have that journey from the kid, who dropped out of school in sixth grade to Brown University.
Jonathan, you bring up so many important issues in that response. I mean, one of them is the difference between accommodating a cognitive difference and instructing. And I know Rich and I work with that on a daily basis in terms of serving children. And one of my questions is that, you know, given that we must work within these federal guidelines under which children must be, quote, labeled or categorized in order to receive special education, related services, accommodations, how do we label a child and have multidisciplinary discussions in a way that is prescribed by these laws, but also while experiencing and implementing this paradigm shift of cognitive diversity and not seeing these as disabilities, appreciating the children's differences?
Well, I think that starts, and that's a struggle that is, I think, very real and pressing for educators, but also for parents and parents that I work with. The question of, you know, how do we not label our children or define our children by their labels, but yet use these things as tools to work a system that's not built for their children. So I think that's a very common experience and struggle. I think it starts and ends in some respect with acknowledging that labels are pragmatic tools, and acknowledging that and being honest about that with all parties involved, including children. You know, Mr. R, really that teacher I keep talking about who made such a big difference in my life. You know, I remember vividly when, and he was the individual that facilitated me being diagnosed, first identifying it. And I remember vividly when he called my mom and I into his office. And, you know, this was the time to have the conversation about a potential learning disability. And I'm sure many of y'all have been in that place. But the most common setting for that conversation is very solemn, right? It's the quiet room, and, you know, right next to the chair where the mom will sit is the tissue box. You know what I mean? Like, you know, 90% of the time, this is bad news, tragic news, a problem when we talk with parents and children about learning differences, right? Not in Mr. R. Mr. R called me and my mom in, and that's an important point because I was an equal partner in the process, called me and my mom in, and we sat in front of him. There were no tissues. And Mr. R said, you know what? Jonathan reminds me a lot of my daughter. My daughter went to Harvard, and my daughter is dyslexic. What a radically different way to frame labels opposed to the tissue box, you know, and the tragedy narrative. And what Mr. R went on to say is he went on to say very clearly that dyslexia is not a problem per se. It's a difference. It has liabilities. It has strengths. But we have to play the game. And we have to call this difference a disability to be able to work a system that's not set up to accommodate difference. So again, he said that to me, third grade, 9 years old.
Third grade, wow.
Yes, third grade. So I think that we do need to respect children's intelligence and respect parents and say, you know what? We have a utopic vision that we're working towards, which is a system that's inclusive of cognitive and physical difference without labels. But we have a long way to go to that vision. And the interim idea is that we get diagnoses and labels as a pragmatic way to play the game. And that's a really important rhetorical shift, because opposed to presenting services and accommodations as a way to fix a kid, when we acknowledge that these are pragmatic tools, in our language we're saying that these things fix a broken system. Not
could
a broken
you,
kid.
Did you understand that in third grade? Did that make sense to you in third grade?
In part. You know, I mean, look, it's an ongoing dialogue. A part of it made sense. But what made a lot of sense to me was this idea that Mr. R framed clearly, that this wasn't a problem. You know what I mean?
Right.
It wasn't a tragedy. It wasn't a sickness. It was something we could manage. And that, in his body language, in his literal language, in his subsequent approaches to me, that came through loud and clear. And that is probably going back to the foundation laid for that dramatic transformation in my life. That probably what made the biggest difference, because I never thought I was broken. I teetered, you know, a long time in high school, you know, I really struggled with that emotionally. But at the end of the day, that message won out for me, and that made all the difference.
Does Mr. R know the effect he had on you, or do you already in touch with him at all?
You know, unfortunately, I'm not. Unfortunately, you know, this, I think, is indicative of the way that our movement towards standardized education grinds up not only the children but teachers as well. Mr. R eventually left the school. He was passed up for a promotion. You know, and I hear this a lot from teachers nowadays. You know, there's a generation of teachers, my generation, you know, I'm 31 years old, born in 1977. There's a generation of young people moving into the educational system where learning differences and cognitive diversity were the norm, you know? They understand these things. You know, they grew up on technology. You know, they're not quite the millennials, but they're almost there in terms of using technology to learn differently. And now they're getting into a system that's actually going in the exact opposite direction. And what happens, I hear this all the time, is a teacher comes up to me and says, Jonathan, you know, I know that kids need to move. I know that the reading groups are damaging and kids should be self-selecting their reading. But the principal walks down the hall once a day, pops their head in my room, and they see a so-called disorganized classroom, and my job's at stake. I hear that all the time. And that was embodied in Mr. R. You know, he was somebody who taught outside the lines and subsequently didn't have the capacity to make a career within the institution.
You know, I think, Jonathan, you're talking a lot about the ongoing messages that we give to children, we give to students in the school system. And I think that, to me, I'm very interested in race and culture. I've headed up committees in my tenure in the school system whose purpose was to explore how we can close the achievement gap between students who are African American or Hispanic, let's say, and their Caucasian and Asian counterparts. To what extent do you discuss and tackle these issues, and you already related this to civil rights, to society's perception of cultural differences, and how do you see that playing into this?
Well, first, I think in a broadening of our discourse on diversity is essential. You know, committees in schools are concerned with achievement gaps for other cultures, ethnicities, socioeconomic backgrounds. You go to universities, there's committees on university diversity that include the holy trinity of diversity, race, class, gender. And there are corporations that have diversity committees that include the same triad. But what's not included 95% of the time is disability and physical and cognitive diversity. So we have to make a commitment to broadening that diversity tent, because what happens is physical and cognitive differences are treated as medical problems. So as medical problems, they don't have a place under the big tent of diversity and identity and culture. So I think that's the first step, is that we demand within any context that we talk about physical and cognitive difference and diversity within the same breath as race, class, and gender. And we broaden it in that respect. Now, second, once we broaden it, we should understand that often young people who come from the place of representing the minority of people with physical and cognitive differences, they have some of the worst outcomes out of any minority group in America. And that's often not spoken when we talk about diversity. I mean, you spend some time with the statistics, you know. Upwards of 70% of federal prisoners will be diagnosed or undiagnosed learning difference or ADHD. 70%, that's a staggering rate, you know. Upwards of 50% of people on welfare or aid, family aid for parents with dependent children, upwards of 50% are people with disabilities. People with disabilities have the largest poverty rate out of any minority constituency in our culture. So once we make that shift, civil rights, identity, diversity, we can then understand that this is one of the most marginalized groups when it comes to social outcomes. Third, I think it's important that we understand and approach young people through the same tools that we're using in critical gender and race theory, and that is understand that in some respects, what young people with learning differences are struggling with most is a stigmatized identity and a marginalized identity and sense of self. You know, when I talk, my talks really aren't about overcoming dyslexia. They're about overcoming being told that I was stupid, crazy, and lazy.
Jonathan, I'm going to ask you to pause there. We're going to go to break and continue with Jonathan in our final segment, and again, encourage you to call in or email in if you have questions.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it. So call us right now. 888-459-4825. 888-459-4825. 459-4825. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, call us now and see how we can help you. 888-459-4825. 888-459-4825. 888-459-4825. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Hi, this is Rich Weinfeld along with my co-host Michelle Davis, and we're speaking with our wonderful guest Jonathan Mooney today. And wanted to remind you, in addition to that call-in number, you can also email us at specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. Jonathan, before we get back into our talk with you, I know people are going to be anxious for more interaction with you and all the wonderful things you're doing after hearing you today. And so, you know, I want to, first of all, let folks know they can go to jonathanmooney.com to see information about your workshops, lectures, books.
Mentoring program.
Yep. Wonderful, wonderful DVDs that capture your live speeches, which are transforming speeches. So I want to really encourage folks to visit that website. I want to encourage folks to check out both of your books, which are both wonderful and so helpful in understanding your experience and the experience of many kids. And I have your upcoming schedule in front of me, which you probably don't even know all the places you're going in the next few weeks.
Appreciate a refresher, Rich. Thanks.
I just want to, for folks who may be in these areas, April 28th in Albany, April 29th in New York City, May 1st at the Boost Conference in Palm Springs, May 7th at Martinsburg, Pennsylvania, and Bellwood, Pennsylvania, May 8th in Stamford, Connecticut, Smart Kids with Learning Disabilities Award Ceremony, May 9th in a school that's close to Michelle and I, Radcliffe Creek School in Chestertown, Maryland, doing a talk on We're Not Broken, and that's 7 o'clock at the Radcliffe Creek School, and May 20th, again in New York City, for the American Committee for Shire Zedek Medical Center in Jerusalem. Jonathan, anything you wanted to add about contact information or about any other projects you're working on that you'd like to have us focus on?
No, I think you got it covered. Between those lectures and whatnot, I think I might run a marathon or something to keep myself busy. But
I know you're taking care of a little boy, too, so that is running a marathon.
Yeah, that's no joke about that, Rich.
So, Jonathan, can you tell us a little bit about your Eye-to-Eye mentoring program?
Sure. Project Eye-to-Eye is an organization that I created when I was at Brown University, and subsequently co-founded as a national organization upon graduation from Brown with a fellow Brown alumni named David Flink. Project Eye-to-Eye has a pretty straightforward and you know, I will say simple mission, not to demean it, but I think its power is in its simplicity. It's an organization that takes college students with cognitive and physical differences, i.e. learning disabilities, attentional issues, and it matches those college students with younger students who have a similar learning profile or background. They match them not as tutors, not as remediation specialists. They match them as mentors. Really an organization that is designed to help a young person, and frankly, help both parties, the person doing the mentoring and the young person being mentored, to help both parties develop a new sense of themselves, to try to do that identity work that's outside of stupid, crazy, lazy, and to give them a sense of themselves as individuals who are part of a community of people with differences, as individuals who have strengths, gifts, and talents, not despite their differences, but frankly because of their differences. Project I2I has 28 chapters in 18 states. It's free of cost for the individuals who participate in the program. My website has all the chapters listed on it and a direct link to projecteyetoeye.org. If anyone's interested in being involved, I encourage them to email me directly or email David Flink, the executive director, via the email and contact information on the website.
Jonathan, that is just such powerful work with peers mentoring peers, and mentoring programs are really researched to be very, very effective. And we're unfortunately getting to the time when we're going to close up, so I'm going to ask a question that relates to future trends. You know, we've made some headway in appreciating diversity in our society, but I think we still have a long way to go. You know, what's normal is somewhat fabricated and in a lot of senses just made up, and our society, I think, still tries to delineate differences. What do you see as future trends in this area and in education and how we treat people with learning differences in general?
I see a hopeful and concerning trend, both going in opposite directions. The hopeful trend is the body of knowledge out there, sort of started by Howard Gardner, Sternberg, Mel Levine. All the research is out there demonstrating that cognitive diversity and learning differences are universal experiences. That research is followed up and put into practice by activists and educators like yourself and Rich doing the work on the ground. And that is a transformative force in our culture that has the capacity to redraw the lines of what it means to teach, learn, and work. That's hopeful. There's a less hopeful trend in the form of standardized education. You know, I lived in New York City for 7 years, and in New York City, every third grader is on the same page of the same book in the same 5-minute period. That's the opposite of cognitive diversity. That's standardized learning. So we have a challenge in front of us, but in that challenge, there's an opportunity. There's an opportunity to redefine what it means to be a learner, a teacher, what it means to be a human being. And if we all collectively, as activists like myself, as educators like you all, as researchers, as thinkers, as parents, if we seize that opportunity, the world will forever be a changed and better place because of it.
And I'm going back to something you mentioned earlier as very important, and I think it ties in with what you're saying right there, is the self-advocacy. How would you promote the self-advocacy?
Well, I think first we need to have a consensus that self-advocacy is a valuable skill to develop, not just a nice thing that one should participate in. We should understand that the research does demonstrate that as a skill set, it probably is more important than a lot of academic skills. So once we have a consensus and it's communicated to parents that this is a valuable skill as a human being, then we need a very structured curriculum to teach those self-advocacy skills in an authentic way. And then lastly, and by the way, that structured curriculum to teach self-advocacy is a gaping hole in the field. There's not much good stuff out there, and I hope that that I and some others interested in doing that work can fill that hole. And then once we have that curriculum, that plan, we need to give young people authentic opportunities to practice those skills. These are not developed in a vacuum. I need to be respected. I need to have the opportunity to sit in my IEPs, run my IEPs. I need an authentic opportunity to practice self-advocacy skills.
Jonathan, I knew this hour would go way too quickly, and I knew we wouldn't have enough time to get into everything, you know, that we wanted to get into with you, but I think our listeners have heard just what a wealth of valuable information and insight you are, and I'd encourage everybody again to go to jonathanmooney.com learn more about the materials and upcoming events. Can't thank you enough for being with us.
Thank you for your extraordinary contributions to learners, period.
Thank you, and thank you all for your work. I do want to leave you with this. Rich brought me to his school when I was a 23-year-old punk, though now I'm a 31-year-old punk, so quite some time ago, brought me to his district. It took a lot of courage to do that, and I want to just personally and publicly thank Rich for that, because I know it's because of his support and the support of many other people like him that I've had the opportunity to play my small part in this effort for reform.
One of the best and easiest decisions I ever made. So real quickly, next week, Mary Ruth Coleman, the past president of the Council for Exceptional Children, will be with us to talk at length about meeting the needs of all children. We look forward to speaking with you then.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's edition of Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. Join your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis again next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Teach your children well, their father's health did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
That your elders grew by, and so please help them with yours. They seek the truth before they can die.
Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by. Them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh, and know they.
Your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.